No one was seriously hurt when a helicopter crashed into the Clark Fork River near Missoula today. Good evening, I'm Sarah Jovetich.
And I'm Courtney Anderson, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Capitol reporter Dan Boyce has details of the sale of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Montana to an out-of-state corporation and the new foundation created from the proceeds. And in our feature interview, reporter Edward O'Brien talks with a Red Cross official about how best to cope with our sudden heat wave. A helicopter crashed in the Clark Fork River northwest of Missoula during firefighting training. The pilot was not injured. Assistant Missoula Rural Fire Chief Brent Christofferson says the pilot was practicing water bucket drops at about 1 this afternoon when the helicopter crashed into the river near Big Flat Road.
It appears that something went wrong when he was practicing those, and so the helicopter went down in the river in our jurisdiction around the wagon wheel trailer court on Big Flat Road in the Missoula Rural Fire District jurisdiction. So,
Christofferson says the pilot was able to get out of the helicopter, but needed help from firefighters to get across the fast-moving river to the shore. The helicopter is sitting upright in about 3 feet of water and will be removed this evening. Christofferson says it is owned by a Lewiston, Idaho company. Rural fire officials say the helicopter is not leaking any fuel into the river.
And in other news from around the state, Lake County authorities believe a body found in a field southeast of St. Ignatius is that of a woman who has been missing since June 16th. Undersheriff Don Yonkin tells a Missoulian a landowner found the body yesterday night. The body was discovered in the same clothing that 52-year-old Mary Jean Bugs Decker was wearing when she was last seen, leaving a St. Ignatius bar. Yonkin says it appears Decker fell into an irrigation canal and was able to get out, but died after that. The body was sent to the state crime lab in Missoula for identification to determine cause of death. Foul play is not suspected. Her body was found within a mile of where her car was abandoned on June 17th.
Officials with Glacier National Park have released the name of a Washington State man who died in a fall on a closed trail. Park spokeswoman Denise Germain says 64-year-old Charles Fred Huseman of Packwood, Washington, died Wednesday afternoon from trauma suffered in a fall from the Highline Trail, which is closed due to snow. Witnesses told park rangers that Huseman was hiking the trail when he slid on a snowfield and fell about 100 feet, landing along the Going to the Sun Road about a mile west of Logan Pass. Huseman died at the scene. The weather that afternoon included sun, rain, hail, and gusty winds.
Montana regulators are giving the okay for a Chicago-based health insurance corporation to buy out Blue Cross Blue Shield of Montana. More than $40 million sale was approved this week. The sale marks a big change for the state's largest private health insurer, but Capitol reporter Dan Boyce says Blue Cross customers should not immediately see too big of a shift in services.
Healthcare Service Corporation is the fourth largest health insurer in the country, with branches across several states. It's been in negotiations with state regulators to buy Blue Cross Blue Shield of Montana for 8 months now. BCBS has been losing money for the last 3 years. Commissioner of Securities and Insurance Monica Lindeen says allowing the sale was still a tough call.
Anytime you have a company that's been a part of Montana history for 70 years, it's a part of our culture, and it's difficult to make a decision about whether or not to change course.
She says the company was running out of options. It was continuing to lose money, and a lot of changes are coming with the implementation of federal health care reform. The sale needed the approval of both Lindeen's office and that of Attorney General Tim Fox. The two eventually decided the sale was in the best interest of Montana consumers once they negotiated some conditions. The current 450 Blue Cross Blue Shield employees will not lose their jobs, at least for 3 years. In fact, the company agreed to create 100 jobs in the state, although Lindeen says they may not be at the existing Blue Cross Blue Shield offices.
It could be a call center that's going to handle claims processing for a number of states for the company.
The company will now pay state premium tax, which BCBS did not do. Certain administrative costs will be frozen. And then there's the matter of the $40 million sale price. Well, under state law, when a nonprofit like Blue Cross Blue Shield is bought out, the proceeds must go toward a nonprofit foundation with a mission as close as possible to that of the original company.
Well, good afternoon, and thanks for taking the time to come here today.
The creation of that foundation is facilitated by Attorney General Fox's office.
Today, I'm happy to announce the creation of the Montana Healthcare Foundation. like Blue Cross Blue Shield, the mission of the Montana Healthcare Foundation will be to provide financial support to improve the quality, availability, and awareness of healthcare programs and services for Montanans.
Beyond that broad mission, though, it's not clear what exactly this healthcare foundation will do. See, the Attorney General's office gets things rolling. He's appointing former UM Law School Dean E. Edwin Eck as the initial interim trustee. Eck will form a search committee to appoint the eventual board of directors, and then his responsibility with the foundation ends, and so does that of the Attorney General's office. Fox says that's by design.
By law, the foundation cannot be an agent or instrumentality of government.
The state will scrutinize this foundation like any other nonprofit, but that's as far as government oversight will go. The independent board of directors will have to decide how to fulfill the requirements of its mission using the funds provided. That money will be the $40 million from the BCBS sale, which should move to the foundation within 60 days. But as the company is dissolving, the sale of its other assets will go to the foundation too, like the company's liquid finances, real estate, etc. This may total as much as about $150 million extra on top of the initial $40 million for the foundation. Back to the insurance company, though. Insurance Commissioner Lynn Dean says even with the buyout, the branch will retain the name Blue Cross Blue Shield of Montana. And as for the coverage provided to Blue Cross's 270,000-some customers?
Whatever folks have for insurance right now will not change.
At least for the length of their individual contracts. I'm Dan Boyce reporting at the Capitol.
A bipartisan group of U.S. senators is urging the Obama administration to focus more on preventing wildfires. The administration is proposing a 31% cut in funding for fire prevention programs 1 year after record blazes burned 9.3 million acres. The federal government routinely spends so much money fighting increasingly destructive fires that it uses money meant to be spent on clearing potential fuels like dead trees and underbrush in national forests. In a letter to the administration, four senators call the habit nonsensical and said it just leads to bigger fires. They also strongly object to the proposed budget cut. The senators who signed the letter are Democrats Ron Wyden of Oregon, Mark Udall of Colorado, and Republicans Lisa Murkowski of Alaska and James Risch of Idaho.
The state is investigating allegations that the coordinator of the Broadwater County Disaster and Emergency Services was allowed to contract some DES work to his own company. Division of Criminal Investigation Director John Strandl told the Independent Record yesterday that he reviewed information from the Broadwater County attorney and said it appears an investigation into Bill Finer and Paradigm Communications and Preparedness Solutions, LLC, is warranted. Finer declined comment. A citizens group has alleged that for a year, the county commission has allowed Finer to contract with Paradigm PCPS for DES services. The group said it could not find any public record of what kind of work Paradigm is to do. The group alleges Flyner worked part-time for the county for $31 an hour, but drew $90 an hour for work assigned to Paradigm.
The vocabulary and structure of most scientific writing can be hard for many readers to understand. Reporter Mike Powell tells us Ann Green at the University of Montana is trying to help simplify such writing.
Ann Green is an adjunct faculty member with the Wildlife Biology Program at UM's College of Forestry and Conservation. She recently published Writing Science in Plain English, a book that focuses on how to clear up scientific writing by replacing much of the language based in Latin, French, and Greek with more familiar words.
English really is a two-tiered language. Most of the time we speak a language based in what's called, it was Anglo-Saxon or Old English. The words that scientists often use, and I think they don't need to use. Most of the time, these words are very much longer, and they aren't centered in the kinds of language we use every day, you and I, to talk. And so there's these two different languages.
Green has taught scientific writing courses at UM for 10 years. Early on, she found several books on the topic at the library on campus. Some of these books about scientific writing had only short sections that dealt with clarity of language and style.
And that's the thing that I thought was most important. I felt that, especially after talking to some of these students, that they were all apparently, you know, having trouble understanding the scientific literature. And in fact, I met scientists and colleagues who were having trouble understanding each other, even in very closely related fields.
Some of the inspiration for Writing Science in Plain English came from Style, Toward Clarity and Grace, a book by Joseph M. Williams that points out the importance of simplifying muddy and complex language.
I wanted to address that in science. So gradually I took the principles that Joseph Williams described in his book and I manipulated them just so that they address scientific writing and what I thought were the problems with scientific writing. And this book has been the result of that.
UM Associate Professor of Biology Art Woods edited Green's book. Together, they taught a scientific writing class to help biology graduate students write for a broader audience.
From one perspective, we scientists are just writing for other scientists, and that's the fundamental thing that we do. But there's also a lot of pressure to explain our science to the public and to justify our science to the public, and we have to do that because a large fraction of science is supported using public funds.
Green's book explains what many readers need in order to understand the ideas and information in scientific writing.
You know, they really do need stories which are made up of characters, real concrete things, doing something, you know. And unfortunately, a lot of scientific writing doesn't tell a story. And then there's lots of technical terms which do save a lot of words and are useful. However, if all your audience doesn't understand those technical terms, then you've lost some readers.
Her book, Writing Science in Plain English, is available at the University of Montana Bookstore, the University of Chicago Press website, and Amazon.com. For Montana Evening Edition, I'm Mike Powell.
Summer is officially here, a fact that rising temperatures make even more clear. While many are hunting for shade or a river to jump in, one artist is taking advantage of the summer heat. Reporter Ruth Eddy has the story.
My name is Jonathan Maxwell Beartusk. I am a solar pyrographer, and I can break that down for you. Solar meaning sun, pyro meaning fire, and graph meaning writing. So I'm writing with fire using the sun.
Beartusk sits in a camping chair outside near the Higgins Street Bridge next to a large piece of wood. A turquoise earring pops on his dark skin, and he has three water bottles to keep him hydrated. Under his welding glasses, he's wearing glasses with one regular lens and one lens that's all black.
3 years ago, I went blind in my right eye. Originally, we thought that it was the really bright bead of light that comes off of the lens onto the wood that was maybe burning my retina.
After checking with specialists in Salt Lake and Portland, Beartusk learned it was just a random stroke in his eye which reduced blood flow. The doctors gave him the go-ahead to keep making his art.
So I'm just really thankful. It's when I'm not burning, I'm grumpy, wishing I were burning.
It was in the espresso coffee cart Beartusk and his wife owned across from the Little Bighorn battlefield where he started making solar art. A friend would bring him magazines to help pass the time, and one article caught his eye.
I still have it. The May-June issue 1980 of the Mother Earth News.
The pictures gave him some good ideas, but he says it was mostly trial and error after that. He started doing portraits of prominent Crow and Cheyenne leaders, but his work has expanded a lot since then.
I was commissioned by Formula One Racing in 2010 to go to Abu Dhabi to the Formula One Grand Prix, and I did a 4-foot by 4-foot picture commemorating 60 years of Formula One racing.
A portrait he did of Barack Obama was picked up by Senator John Tester and taken to the White House, which is where it now lives. When he was in Abu Dhabi, he was asked to put together 20 pieces for a full show, which is what he was working on today. Some Bedouin portraiture and desert scapes.
I have to get the angle right. The angle of my wood has to be just right, and so I
The piece of recycled flooring is at about a 45-degree angle, and he's keeping it upright with something similar to a guitar stand. He holds about a 3-inch-wide magnifying glass a short distance from the wood, and soon a bright light appears, and the plank starts to smoke.
And so I do one dot, and then I move it over and do another little dot, and another dot, and another dot. My goal here is just to let people see solar art.
Beartusk says many people have never seen a solar artist at work, and he's happy to hear all the reactions of passerbys. He has some bigger goals for the future, though. Eventually, he would like to go back to the Crow Reservation and open an art co-op. At least for the summer, though, he'll be soaking up the sun in Missoula.
I just feel really fortunate to be able to be using the same sun that gave strength and vision and to my people. I embrace the heat. I embrace the extremes. I love just to feel uncomfortable.
Being uncomfortable under the summer sun is just good business for a solar artist. You can see his solar art for yourself at danceofthesungallery.com. For Montana Evening Edition, I'm Ruth Eddy.
Just as forecasters promised, hot temperatures have moved into the region. The National Weather Service says daytime temperatures will warm more than 30 degrees over the next several days, approaching 100 degrees in parts of western Montana. The agency adds the upcoming heat wave will be one of the earliest recorded in the past 120 years. The American Red Cross of Montana is seizing this opportunity to remind Montanans this weather event presents dangers since we haven't really had an opportunity to acclimate to warmer temperatures yet this summer. In tonight's feature interview, Communications Director Anna Fernandez-Gevart tells Edward O'Brien the Red Cross does more than sponsor blood drives and provide disaster assistance.
Well, the Red Cross is involved in general safety measures that people can take. We do try to educate the general public on things they can do to keep themselves safe in all kinds of situations. So here in Montana, people are not generally as aware as in some parts of the country about how dangerous heat can be, and we just want to make sure that we do our part in making sure they understand that.
Yeah, we're familiar with the cold, maybe not so much the heat always.
That's right. Everybody knows what to do to protect themselves from the cold in Montana, but the heat can be just as dangerous, and if not more dangerous. In fact, the heat is responsible for the greatest number of deaths throughout the country in the last few years. So that's something most people don't know and something we want to make sure everybody understands.
Okay, well, let's start with an obvious one, and that is cars. It's amazing how little time it takes for cars to get dangerously hot, yeah?
Yes, that's right. And so it's very important not to leave children or pets unattended in a car, because in a matter of minutes, it could be life-threatening to them. So that's the most important thing probably to remember over the course of the summer.
So maybe not such a great idea to run into a grocery store, take care of the week shopping. By the time you get out, there could be serious trouble in the car.
Absolutely. And in fact, I think in some communities, you could be fined for leaving a child or an animal in the car unattended during either very hot temperatures or very cold ones.
Okay. And we're always told to stay hydrated, drink plenty of fluids, right?
That's right. It's very important to keep drinking fluids, even if you do not feel thirsty. And it's also important to avoid drinks with caffeine and alcohol, which are dehydrating. And it's also important to remember to wear loose-fitting, lightweight, and light-colored clothing, as dark colors absorb the sun's rays.
A lot of people would say, boy, there's nothing better on a hot summer weekend day than a cold beer.
Well, the general recommendation is to avoid alcohol during, you know, the hot temperatures, yes.
What about intense exercising in this kind of heat?
You know, we advise against strenuous exercise during the hottest parts of the day. And we also advise that people postpone outdoor games and activities during heat waves. It's a good idea to slow down and stay indoors. And if you have access to air-conditioned space, to take advantage of that.
What is heat exhaustion and what is heat stroke? Is there a difference there?
They are different. Heat exhaustion is considered to be dangerous but not necessarily life-threatening. It's typified by cool, moist, pale, or flushed skin, heavy sweating, headaches, nausea, dizziness, and weakness. A heat stroke usually involves changes in consciousness. It includes hot and red skin, which may be dry or moist. Vomiting can occur, and also usually there are high body temperatures. If that condition exists, if you see those signs, it's important to call 911 right away.
And in the meantime, what should we do for somebody who we suspect is being affected by heat stroke? Is there anything that, any techniques we should do?
Yes, there are things you can do. You can move the person to a cooler place, quickly cool down the person's body, and you can do that by immersing them up to the neck in cold water if possible. Otherwise, douse or spray the person with cold water or cover the person with cold, wet towels or bags of ice. The idea is to lower the person's body temperature.
You, a couple of minutes ago, mentioned the importance of not overexerting in very hot weather. I always wonder how the men and women who have to work outside, road crews, that sort of thing, how do they handle the heat? Any advice for them?
Yes, we do have advice for them. A good idea is to use the buddy system and to take frequent breaks while working outdoors. The buddy system, essentially, you're keeping eyes on someone you're working with to look for signs for heat exhaustion and also to encourage them to keep drinking. So it's a good idea not to be alone if the temperatures are truly very high.
And speaking of alone, what about senior citizens? They may be particularly susceptible to extreme weather, heat in particular, yeah?
Yes, senior citizens would be considered a vulnerable population, and the Montana Red Cross recommends that family and friends and neighbors of senior citizens check on them as much as possible to make sure that they are doing okay.
Okay, and I guess maybe lastly, pets or livestock. We mentioned, leave your dogs out of the cars during this sort of heat. But what about just outside?
Well, it's a good idea to check on animals frequently to ensure that they're not suffering from the heat. It's also very important that they have plenty of cool water, and ideally they should also have shade during very hot times.
Okay, and redcross.org has a lot of, pardon the lame pun, but a lot of cool ideas.
Yes, redcross.org has lists available on that people can download to check on what they can do to stay safe during the hot summer months. We also have a first aid app, which is free and can be downloaded either at the Apple Store or the Google Play Store. And we encourage people to do that because there's lots of good information from the Red Cross about how people can stay safe in all kinds of situations. Just because we are entering wildfire season, we would appreciate a plug about people assisting us financially, because during the summer months is when we deplete our coffers. And so if you could mention that donations are welcome, either at redcross.org Montana or by calling 1-800-272-6668. We would very much appreciate that.
Sure. Why? I'm just curious, why is summertime such a difficult time financially for you?
Well, because wildfires are the most expensive disasters we typically are involved in Montana. Floods also usually play a role, but this wildfire season is expected to be especially severe in southwest Montana, and that involves setting up shelters sometimes, and that gets very costly very quickly.
Indeed. I've been speaking with Anna Fernandez-Gavart of the American Red Cross of Montana. Thanks a lot for this good information.
Thank you for the opportunity to share this information with the people of Montana.
In tonight's weather forecast, for west of the Continental Divide, tonight calls for clear skies with lows in the 50s. Tomorrow will be mostly sunny in the morning, then becoming partly cloudy with slight showers in the afternoon and evening. Highs will be in the 90s. Sunday, expect mostly clear skies with lows in the upper 40s. Highs will be in the upper 80s to mid-90s. For central Montana, tonight calls for mostly clear skies with lows in the upper 50s. Tomorrow will be sunny in the morning, then become partly cloudy. Isolated thunderstorms in the afternoon and evening with highs in the upper 80s. Sunday, expect partly cloudy skies with a slight chance of showers and highs in the upper 80s. And for southwest Montana, tonight expect mostly clear skies with lows in the 50s. Tomorrow will be sunny in the morning, then become partly cloudy with scattered showers in the afternoon and evening, and the highs around 85 to 90 degrees. Sunday calls for partly cloudy skies with a slight chance of thunderstorms and highs around 80 to 90 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Tom Roberts.
The U.S. has worse health than all other developed nations in the world. As a group, we die earlier and are more disabled than comparable countries. This set of facts is well documented in a recent publication entitled U.S. Health in International Perspective, Shorter Lives, Poorer Health. If you're at all interested, it's a good read and easy to find on the web at the Institute of Medicine site. One of the takeaways from this report is there's not just one area where we are worse. In comparison to other countries, we have poorer health due to a wide variety of problems. Infants are more likely to have low birth weight and to die in their first year. More of us die from injuries, violence, and automobile accidents. We have a much higher rate of teenage sex, pregnancy, STDs, and AIDS. We lose more years to alcohol and have a higher rate of prescription drug-related death than other countries. Americans consume more calories, are fatter, and have more diabetes. We have the second highest rate of heart disease and the highest rate of chronic lung disease. We also have more arthritis and activity limitations. Beyond simply looking at these health disparities, this report also begins to look at why we compare so poorly. Why is it that Americans are not doing as well as other people? The other critical issue is to start asking what we can do to improve our health. An approach that is being advocated for addressing many of these health-related issues is called the public health approach. The idea is that issues common to all Americans are not just individual problems. They need to be addressed and solved collectively. Blaming individuals for eating too much, drinking too much, having unhealthy and early sexual experiences, smoking too much, driving too fast, owning too many guns, and taking too many drugs isn't going to solve the problem that these activities create. What does work are population-based approaches that aim at prevention. Our ability to reduce motor vehicle deaths is a good illustration. Instead of blaming bad drivers, automobile manufacturers have developed collapsible steering columns, safety glass, seat belts, and airbags. Roads have been improved by creating clear roadsides and rumble strips. Laws and enforcement regarding seat belt and phone use, child restraints, and alcohol have been emphasized. Social norms regarding these have gradually changed. The emergency medical system has also improved. Drivers are not much better than they were in the 1950s, but these multiple interventions have resulted in a drop in fatalities of over 80% per mile driven. This is an example of a systems approach, and it is what we need to use if we are serious about addressing our collective health issues. We are currently experiencing an epidemic of prescription narcotic abuse. In the U.S. today, more people are dying from inadvertent drug overdose than are dying from either automobile accidents or from guns. Almost all of these deaths are from narcotics, which are obtained from a doctor's prescription through a pharmacy. These narcotics are frequently shared or sold to others. Montana has one of the highest death rates in the nation and also one of the highest narcotic prescription rates. And the problem is larger than a simple death count. For every one person who dies, 10 people are admitted to our hospitals, 32 are seen in our emergency rooms, 130 are addicted, and over 800 take narcotics recreationally and not for medical reasons. We've already taken some systemic steps to deal with this problem, but more are needed. Montana recently instituted a statewide drug registry which tracks who's getting these narcotics and where, making it much more difficult for people to see multiple prescribers and visit different pharmacies. Pharmacists nationally have recently been held accountable for not monitoring appropriate drug use. They are now becoming more part of the team approach to this issue. Provider and patient education on non-narcotic approaches to chronic pain are being emphasized. Early and intensive treatment and monitoring of individuals is also improving. General awareness of the danger is improving. We are a long way from solving the problem, but at least we've begun to recognize it and deal with it. We are acknowledging that changing our system is largely the solution. Simply blaming the narcotic users is clearly not the answer. Similar public health approaches need to be implemented for many of our current health issues, including obesity, childhood illness and death, gun violence, risky sexual behaviors, and lack of physical activities. In order to do this, we have to begin by recognizing that the American cultural norm of individual responsibility for the problem or the solution is not the right answer. Thanks for listening. This is Dr. Tom Roberts.
Tom Roberts is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Sarah Jovetic.
And I'm Courtney Anderson. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.